Hello, Virgo, and welcome to the third and final part of your 2014-15 birthday reading. This is our moment for astrology afterthoughts and then a tarot reading. Always some interesting astrology afterthoughts. I have one for you, which is to cover the action of the Uranus-Pluto square in your chart. I've done this in a number of other readings. This is a long-lasting aspect, and it certainly invites ongoing reinterpretation and use as a tool for going through the layers of your astrology and your experience of your astrology, which is your experience of life. So let's just talk a little bit about that for a second. The Uranus-Pluto square obviously involves two slow-moving planets in a long-lasting pattern. The slow-moving planets are Uranus, which is in Aries, which for you is the eighth house, the eighth place from your ascendant or sun, and then Pluto, which is even more slowly moving, and it is moving through your fifth house or fifth place from your sun or from your ascendant. And these are something of unstoppable forces in astrology. They are the planets that astrologers learn early to respect and learn to, if they are good astrologers, harness in the most constructive way. The bad astrologers, and there is such a thing, only see the part of these, the aspect, the presentation of these planets that cannot be handled easily or that is destructive. And they are here, as are all planets, to help us with our growth and our self-understanding and to make the changes that humans so often find that it is so difficult to make. So let's take these houses. Let's just talk about the houses that are involved. House 5 and House 8. There is a presentation called It's All About the Houses. This is easily found on the internet, and I've got several different presentations on the houses so that you can do a little bit more research into them. I'm not a big fan of the way houses are delineated in astrology books, and I do like the way that I figure them out, although I think what you'll find is that the delineations in astrology books are vaguely consistent with what I am saying, though probably with a different understanding. House 5 is the house of pleasure, gambling, creativity, and sex. Now, sex has all those prior three things in common: pleasure, gambling, and creativity, at least on a good day with a partner that you like, when everyone is somewhat clear-headed and voluntarily there. It is the house of art, of gaming, of risky type of sports, and it is also the house where we seek sex for the fun of it. Remember that? The fun of it. Not the marriage of it, not the monetary value of it, not the bargaining chip value of it, not the romance, not the dinners, not the travel coupons, not the car, not the anything but actual human adolescent fun. This adolescent quality of the fifth is crucial to embrace, accept, and recognize. There's a piece up on the Planet Waves website right now about the steps to sexual healing. That absolutely deserves to be included with your art, with your reading here. So let me just make a note of that. Steps to sexual healing. And I'll also include, it's about all about the houses. And he talks about the need to step into that adolescent awkwardness, to return to that phase, which is so often plastered over by applying repression and social convention. And what the author is saying is that we need to re-enter that sense of awkwardness, because as he describes it somewhat brilliantly, is that it is a fertile seeding ground for many wonderful things to come. And so this is the fifth. Now, the fifth has an unusual quality, which is to draw people deeper. That fun stuff can have consequences, whether it be gambling or art or pleasure of any kind, or daring sports, or sex for the pleasure of it. Sex for the pleasure of it without the notion of responsibility applied, which, by the way, you are pretty good at doing, making sure that responsibility piece is there, has a way of having other consequences, just as though gambling without paying attention can drive a person into debt, and risky sports can lead to injuries. Sex can lead to, for example, unintended pregnancies with people with whom you should not be involved. And so with the fifth, there is a need for caution. And I would say that with Capricorn on the fifth, you are very good at the caution part, and perhaps somewhat less good at the risk part. And that Capricorn in the fifth wants to consecrate all those things that are so much fun and so much pleasure. Though Capricorn does have a daring side to it, and Saturnalia, which happens when the sun is in Capricorn, speaking for ancient Rome in the present tense, slipping back to my lifetime of being an astrologer in ancient Rome, is one of the most revelry-filled times of the year. It is dark in the Northern Hemisphere, and people need some fun and some release. And if you look up Saturnalia in Wikipedia or anywhere, you will find that it was quite the moment of debauchery. And this is where the sun is passing through when it is the dark of the year. When it is Saturnalia time, the sun is in your fifth house, highlighting all of those things. So you've got that tension there between the fifth house and its desire for freedom and for pleasure, overlaid by Capricorn with its tendency to structure, to seek rules, to seek commitment, and to do things in a way that might please your parents. We'll come to what Pluto has to say about that in the second bite of the apple. Let's go to the eighth house. The eighth house, perhaps the most complex house in all of astrology. The basic topics of the eighth house, well, let's not rattle them all off. Let's start with, it begins with death, dowry, and the substance of the bride. According to Lilly, who took a lot of old astrology and in 1647 bundled it up into a book called Christian Astrology, which he meant love. When he says Christian, he meant trustworthiness and love, the real thing. And the eighth in modern times has become a house of business deals, of banking, of investments to some degree. That's a relationship to the fifth, which is about speculation, and of shared resources. Perhaps the most important keyword of the eighth is shared resources. And you see all your other death, dowry, substance of the bride, investments, all that in the meta theme of, I'll say it again, shared resources. So it is the house of the marital contract and of inheritance, and that's where it gets its root meaning from. But in modern psychological astrology, it has evolved into a place where we find out a lot about a person's inner sexual nature, because it so rather blatantly deals with the topic of surrender and the way that you want to surrender and what it is that you need on that visceral level and what you need others for to assist you with, what it is about them that that you often feel like you can only get from the context of partnership. Very important idea here. And you have Aries in this house, and so there is an inherent contradiction, again, that contradiction being that Aries is very much self-seeking. It is self-aware. It is the sign of I am, and you have it in the house of not we are, that's the seventh, but we are bound by this agreement. And so it's as if you might feel you can only find that we are-ness through some form of agreement. This is similar to what's going on in the fifth, which should be play and taking risks and adolescent experimentation. And exploration without strings attached can become this codified, crystallized type of thing. In the eighth, it seems as if you may only have the capacity to exist, to have a sense of existence by contract with another person. This is a very common phenomenon of getting that sensation of feeling like one exists by being in a relationship. Interesting, right? And these houses are working in parallel, and there is a really hot square going on between them, meaning they're 90 degrees apart, and Pluto and Uranus are occupying these locations, and they are in an ongoing 90-degree relationship, which has met 5 times so far. There are going to be 2 more meetings, one in November, one in March. The midpoint, the peak of the whole shebang, was in November of 13, and then now we have 2 more of the 7 meetings, and then this event is going to remain in effect, but it's going to trail off. It's going to have different types of influences. And we'll get to review all this crazy stuff that's gone on, for example, in the world involving the militancy of these cardinal signs. I'm not so concerned about this militancy in your chart, except we will add at the end a footnote about that. Now, Pluto in the fifth in Capricorn is wanting to demolish the traditions that have prevented you from having fun. That is to say, there is a liberationist quality, and I think that the associating the concept with the evolutionary imperative with Pluto was indeed a great gift of 20th century astrology. That, by the way, comes through the teacher Yogananda, who gave it to an astrologer. The astrologer popularized it, but the root concept of that, as I understand it from hearing the story very close to firsthand, is that the evolutionary imperative of Pluto is a pretty high teaching. Yogananda is one of the great masters of our era, and we've all seen this work, and the thing is that, you know, Pluto, like Chiron, has that double-edged thing. It might not quite work out the way things should be. For example, 9/11 didn't work out that well for anyone, really. Okay, so Pluto is applying this evolutionary... Oh, and by the way, Pluto was all over 9/11. Footnote that. Okay. Now, the evolutionary imperative moving through Capricorn, moving through your fifth house, is saying make room to celebrate your life, to have fun, to experiment, to learn from experience. And the fifth, in practical terms, for adults, comes down to sex, to fucking for fun. Whatever you think of sex as being, it could be lots of other things, the fun part, the part that you like to do, just because you like to do it and you like the contact, having nothing to do with what should be, what is moral. I assume that you are sufficiently ethical that you follow the law and get permission to do what you do, and that's all you need. The ethics of sex need only go that far into following the law, which basically means everyone's over the age of 18, depending on what state you're in, and the word yes. Once those are covered, you're free to do what you want. And the question is, what do you do? What do you grant yourself permission to do? And Pluto is saying, knock down these inner barriers. Clean out all of the extraneous material that has come from the ancestral line implied by Capricorn, which goes back obviously way further than your parents, though you would make a good start of recognizing all the disinformation that you were given by your parents and by other structured institutions who essentially seek to control the human race through false morality. And Pluto is saying that this is an evolutionary imperative. And so therefore, don't be surprised if on some intuitive level you are associating growth and healing and your personhood with sexual liberation in some way. Eighth house, Aries. This is the conundrum of I seek myself through contact with the other. That works well for a while, sometimes. Sometimes it works well for a while, for a long while. And then sometimes you simply need to find yourself on your own without being contractually bound to another person, particularly if that is an unspoken, unwritten contract. But the spoken written ones also can be quite kind of stuck. And the revolutionary influence in this house, the thing that is seeking independence, that is seeking freedom from this type of spoken or unspoken contractual bond, is Uranus, the revolutionary, the awakener, the thief. You may feel like you're stealing your freedom from someone else. And this is what I would call genuinely revolutionary astrology, because it's saying your most significant agreement is with yourself, and there is no way that an agreement with anyone else can trump your agreement with yourself. That's just not going to work. You have to make your agreement, you have to be good with yourself before you can make any promises to anyone else. You need to know that you're capable of fulfilling a promise and that you really want to do it and that you have the concept of being able to see forward in time long enough to be able to predict that you will want to be there in 5 or 10 or forever, which there's no such thing. Even the sun goes nova. Okay, now put these two together and we're really talking about a revolution, and it is a sexual revolution, and that means it is a relational revolution where your relationships, including your relationship to existence, to your creativity, to other people, and to the agreements you have with other people, are all up for a complete reshuffling, rearrangement, rethinking, revolution. Evolution coming out of the fifth, Pluto and Capricorn, revolution coming out of the eighth, and you could say that your job is to give yourself the place to experiment and the freedom to find yourself without having to define yourself through another person. That you exist, you have a sense of your existence, and that's the gift of this square ongoing. And it is daring territory for a lot of reasons. One of them is that there's been such moral baggage heaped on top of sexuality, and it is also downplayed by almost every New Age tradition, which says, well, this is lower chakra. I heard a very smart person say that. Watch out for that whole, this is lower chakra thing. That is, in my opinion, complete bullshit. All the chakras are equally important. No chakra is higher, lower, more valuable, less valuable, more pure, more valid, more or less spiritual, more or less friends with God than any other chakra. You've got however many you've got, 7, let's say, hypothetically, plus all the extra ones, and they are all necessary. Balance is also necessary, and we have lots of consciousness raising to do around these lower chakras rather than pretending that they don't exist, because they are all oriented on survival and they are oriented on the core level of energy that we access, because the Kundalini starts at the bottom and rises. And if the lower chakras are blocked, it ain't going anywhere. And so what you might think of this as being as on one level, that Pluto and Capricorn level, liberating, unclogging, setting free through the process of creativity, curiosity, experimentation, re-entering that awkward space, and so forth, and clearing all that ancestral baggage out of the way. Curiosity will be a very big help with that. Coupled with liberating yourself from needing to think of yourself as only existing as a partner or half a relationship. And this is very taboo territory. The New Age does not like to go here. I have spent a lot of time in and around the New Age, lots of time in and around religion, and I would dare to say that there are many places where conventional religion, like the Quakers or the Unitarians, not that conventional, but still, or the Catholics. The Pope is saying, we got to get off this whole thing about, you know, defining our whole lives about gay bashing and abortion bashing as defining our whole religion. Even the very Pope is aware that the negative emphasis of religion on sex has got to end. The New Age is still making a lot of money by harvesting the mystical longing. That's what Wilhelm Reich described as the product of sexual repression. It's converted into an energy that feels spiritual. It's a brilliant observation. Jung made it as well. And he was of that same original cluster of people pioneering our maps of the psyche. Jung observed that sexual repression leads to a kind of obsession with spiritual seeking, which seems so pure and seems so good. And, you know, you pay for the workshop and you go to the self-improvement thing. But it's like, yeah, except that humans are visceral and we're horny and we have hormones and we're curious about each other. And I would just caution you that there are lots of places to hear how naughty, naughty, naughty that is. And it's not mature. And I could go on and on about this. And here, what I'm here to tell you, this is why you're tapping into me as your astrologer, in case you don't know that, is, yeah, you need to be you and to experience you and experiment with who you are. And right now, there is the aspect of all aspects powering your fifth and your eighth houses. Mind you, going back to the first section of this reading, which I suggest you give a little listen to again, the presence of Chiron and Neptune and Nessus and Borysici all in your seventh house is saying there are relationship portals here. We talked a lot about unconventional type of relationships, relationships where there's teaching, where there's healing, where there's understanding sought as a way of relating, as the central theme, the purpose of relating. And those relationships become the portal for the action of Uranus Pluto. It is the perfect setup. The thing about it that maybe is challenging is that these are all outer planets. These are slow-moving things that, to many people, can seem like they are totally alien energy. Everyone understands Venus. You like chocolate. You get a crush on someone. I like to have wood tabletops everywhere. I like my stuff, right? That's Venus and Taurus in my case. You like beauty around you. You like to leave the house looking nice. Everybody understands that. That's Venus. Chiron, this is like the mentor can also double as the drug addict on the street who comes up to you asking for a dollar. Your highest teacher can also be represented by the same planet as someone who walks up to you pushing a shopping cart and asking for money for a bus ticket. I mean, that's kind of complicated. And it, as I've explained, it represents a similar process of where you place yourself in your role as a healer. And so one thing to be aware of is that as you do this healing on yourself, you are going fifth and eighth, you're going to attract people who are going to benefit from that process of healing. And voila. So bear all that in mind. And also, I think really the thing I want to caution you of the most is all of the obsessive negativity around sex and sexual healing and sexuality experimented with as a creative tool for you rather than as, you know, the bargaining chip or the thing about so-called seeming commitment only appropriate in extremely limited circumstances. And by the way, I am, in case there is any confusion, talking about a vast space of creative exploration that exists between the drunk, mindless hookup and permanent monogamous marriage. There is a territory as wide as a continent between them, and there is a kind of a cover-up of the existence of that territory by lots of different factions. And every time you turn on the damn television is more eHarmony and Match.com, you know, proffering basically the concept of the soulmate. And that, as does the New Age. And this is not going to work to do this type of, shall we say, hands-on experimentation that is all about art and love and celebrating your independence and your autonomy as the incredibly beautiful person that you are. Okay, I have gone on now for 26 minutes and 30 seconds, and I am finally shuffling my double deck of the James Wanless Tarot, called the Voyager deck. Once got to have dinner with James Wanless in Massachusetts. I may actually get to do that again soon because he's coming back to Massachusetts. And there, I don't really leave my neighborhood very often, but there are some people it is worth getting in the car and driving several hours to have dinner with. And I'm always happy to burn a couple of gallons of gas and do that. All right. Shuffling this very large deck, which is too large to wrap my somewhat small hands around 140 something cards, and let's see what these cards have to say. All right, and I'm using my own deck, the Celtic Wings deck, which we usually include a model of connected to a tarot generator, so you can experiment with it. I think the article is included. Well, and let's see what we have got going here. First card I turn over is card 1, 2, 3, 4, What Do You Want? And we come to the Lovers. This is an interesting thing to emerge from this last little 26-minute, 30-second rant that I gave about the nature of sexual liberation. And I would add in that context that if you are seeking the Lovers, if you are seeking to live the way of the lover, that is a way of liberation, because real love and real bonding is always an act of freedom made again and again as a choice. This also is about making decisions. The Lover's card, beneath the exoteric level of the critters embracing and whatever form they might take, there is the part of this card that is all about making good decisions, correct choice. It is Trump 6 that evokes the center of the tree of life to which everything connects. And so there is a reminder that the lovers are part of an interconnected network of souls and of community, which you might call Tantra. First card, card 1, Ecstasy, the Ace of Cups, the card of the root of the powers of love. I think of this as the self-love card. It is an honorary Trump card, in my opinion, and it is saying that remember that whatever you do, all love that you share has its roots in your self-love. Once this is figured out, it becomes so obvious that you could think, how could I have ever missed this? How could I have not gotten this? So I think that you are aligned rather magnificently to get it. So, card number two, recent past, 3 months, 3 seasons, 3 years, etc., fear. And that is saying that is in your past, but not so far in your past that you have forgotten it. Next card, what surrounds you and is in the process of leaving, in the old way of saying this from the Celtic cross type books, this is breakthrough. And so the implication here is that you have basically made a discovery of some kind that has moved you from fear to love in some revolutionary way. Some discovery, some brilliant experiment has gone right. Next card, this is before you. Okay, you might know about my inverted card rule, which is I usually don't read the cards inverted except when they are saying, read me inverted. And in this case, I've picked up the next card, narrowness, the nine of crystals inverted. And that is saying rather loudly, keep an open mind. Interpreted further, do not allow yourself to get trapped in conventions or to have others make decisions for you, to set rules for you, to bind you in their narrow ways. And so be cognizant of this. Be conscious of when you are trying to fit your mind inside someone else's mind. Be aware that this is not really possible, and to the extent that it is, you're courting misery along the way. Okay, resistance. This is the card from the Celtic cross that had the kind of phrase, these are your negative thoughts. I call it resistance. Harvest. It is a very Virgo-like card because it's illustrating the Virgo time of year. The squirrel gathering nuts for winter. These beautiful ferns. The whole card is set in autumn colors, and there are lots of planets around. And this is saying that it does require openness to harvest what you have grown for yourself, what you have given yourself, and that is an invitation to harvest. Okay. All right. Next, another inverted card. This is going to work the same either way. We are now in the realm of your relationships here, where there are two cards, and in the Celtic crossbred, there is one card that is used to connote relationships and environment. Two is not much better, but at least it's double. And the first card is confusion, and that is saying beware of the confusion of others. Now, there's a very strong caution here that is saying you are on the right path. You are discovering what works for you, what's true for you, what's beautiful for you. Be aware there are other people whose ideas are not as enlightened, and their ideas can and will influence you if you let them. Okay, the card next to that is balance, and that is something of a remedy here. And we could say that the thing that you would benefit the most from doing is make sure that your situations are in balance. It is not balance for you to be open-minded and someone to be closed-minded. For example, it is balanced for you to be open-minded matched by the choice of being with an open-minded person, whoever that person might be. And there is a caution about looking at others for their inner state of balance, be it psychological and emotional balance, be it gender balance. That's a really important one. Their internal gender balance, what are they emphasizing? Who is their who is their inner man or inner woman that is opposite from the sex that their body possesses? Are they in touch with that person? To what extent is your role in their life a projection of what they wish or want their inner opposite to be? Okay, next card, Outcome at Present Course and Speed. Another one of these beautiful type of autumn type cards, but this actually illustrates Aries because there's a ram in there. And it is the card of commencement. And the implication here is that you are at a beginning, and remember that not everybody else is going to be at that same beginning. So the message here is honor your beginning. Honor your point of commencement, your point of departure. You are on a very unusual path, and you have rather large opportunities to grow, to experience, and to set yourself free, regardless of how old you are. And this is a reminder that you are at a rather beautiful point of beginning in your life. All right, last card, checking my work and summarizing the whole thing, just drawn. The Sage of Wands, the Seer. I would say that is healthy confirmation that there is a real vision coming through here, and to remember that you know. Remember what you know, and in the words of my magnificent Virgo rising teacher, Joe Truso, use what you know. And the Seer is saying, you can see. That is what you do. You perceive. Let yourself off the hook for what you see, for what you want, for what you love, for who you love, and just go for the love part. All right. This has been lots of fun. I have learned a lot doing this. That's always my point of confirmation, is how good it feels for this information to come through, and the new connections and discoveries that I make. And this has felt awesome. I hope it works for you. Please do send your feedback to dreams@planetwaves.net. Please stick the words Virgo feedback in your subject header so I can find the emails like the next day or even the next hour. Remember, there is going to be a Virgo conference call that will be held sometime in the next week or so. These conference calls are now included with this process. That will be true until early next year when we'll make them into a separate thing. But for now, everyone is invited into the conference calls, so give that a listen. They're really amazing. Not that many people are willing to speak and participate, so you actually can get quite a bit of time having your ideas, thoughts, and questions heard, taking advantage of the fact that people tend to be shy and don't necessarily want to speak up. So I would encourage you to follow that, get to that discussion, and to speak up and bring your questions about your astrology. Can't think of anything else to mention except that the music you're listening to, this intro outro music, is composed by Casey Smith. It was kind of a spontaneous moment where all of the gear was on, and he sat down with my G&L Comanche, and the music just started coming out of his hands. I flipped on a portable recorder and held it in front of the speaker. So this is as simple as a recording gets, but I thought this is really impressively beautiful, simple theme. And thank you, Casey, a Virgo whose birthday was a few days ago. And thank you to all of the beautiful Virgos in my life. My dog friend, Jonah Kelly Francis, Betty Dotson, one of my teachers, Joseph Truso, Virgo Rising, my great and beautiful teacher and former therapist, and lots of other people out there on this planet who have provided that amazing mirror to Pisces for me. Signing off with love right before the Pisces full moon at about 20 to 12 Eastern time on Sunday the 7th. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.